Track 6. Welcome once again to the Sports Desk for our latest report. And the biggest sporting headlines over the past week must have been all about the British and Irish Lions' third and final test match against the New Zealand All Blacks in Auckland on Saturday morning. This one ended as a draw, 15 points apiece. Perhaps a moral victory to the All Blacks as they scored the only two tries in the match, but thanks to nerveless penalty kickings by Lions standoff Farrell, plus a monster from the halfway line contributed by Elliot Daly, a draw it was, and also a drawn series with one victory to each side and this last game ending equal. The encounter was full-blooded from the kick-off, nearly a try at both ends in the opening minutes, but the Blacks began to get on top and they scored first. A beautifully constructed try with a cross kick palmed back by their right wing straight into the hands of none other than their hooker, who was keeping right up with their backs, and he plunged over the line to score. It looked ominously as though the Blacks were at their rampaging best and the Lions would be tested just to keep them out, never mind venturing upfield themselves. But Farrell's boot was their saviour, and gradually the Lions got into the game. The Blacks became less clinical and were never the dominant force in the second half that they had been earlier. It's been a remarkable tour by the Lions, often derided as no-hopers by their hosts, and by no means at their best in several of the games against the provincial sides before the three internationals. But they stood up in those three, were counted, and deserved not to lose the series, in my view. There were too many heroes to pick out one man of the series. It was a collective team effort in all three matches against the Blacks. But New Zealand did win the haka, their traditional war dance before each match, led by their stand-in scrum half Perenara, probably the smallest man in their squad. They produced a performance each time worthy of an Oscar. I could easily imagine that man pepping up a Maori war party prior to battle with these damned English colonialists a couple of hundred years ago. Superb. Saturday's rugby was not the only test match over the weekend. There was also the cricket version at Lord's, where England were hosting South Africa. This was Joe Root's first match as England captain, and it may have been a little uncomfortable for him, as his predecessor Alistair Cook was also playing in the team. But if that did unsettle Root, he showed no sign with a magnificent 190 runs in the first innings that was the bedrock of an England total of 458. Root's main support in that first inning came from Worcestershire's Moeen Ali, who scored 87, while Stuart Broad scored 57, and these three were the mainstay of the English first innings, as no one else greatly troubled the scorers. Moeen took four wickets as South Africa battled their way to a reply of 361, giving England a first innings lead of 97. But England made a mess of their second innings when only Cook and Bairstow made any runs. A total of 233 all out left South Africa facing a second innings total of 331 to win the match. However, if England's second innings had been poor, South Africa's was farcical. They were all out for just 119. Moeen took six wickets to add to his four in the first innings, and he was declared man of the match for a terrific all-round performance. England have selected an unchanged squad of players for the second test match of the series, which is due to get underway at Trent Bridge, Nottingham, on Friday. Other cricket action at the weekend saw the England women's 11 beat Australia in their latest match in the Women's World Cup. This was a tense, tight victory by just three runs, and the first time the English ladies have beaten the Aussies for over 20 years. The Women's World Cup, just like the male version, is played on a 50-overs-a-side format, and England batted first in this match, scoring a total of 259 for eight. There was no outstanding batting performance, but several useful contributions. But the Aussies probably thought that a 260 runs required to win target would not be that difficult. But England's bowling attack, backed up by excellent fielding, would not be denied, and Australia were never up with the required scoring rate. When they tried to accelerate near the end, wickets tumbled, and while the crowd held their breath, Australia needed to score a six off the last ball to win, they ended three runs short of their target. An excellent tournament for England, who play New Zealand next on Wednesday. There's a lot of cricket news this week. I'd better move on swiftly to action in our local Worcestershire County League over the weekend. There was a local derby to add spice to the fixture list, Hagley versus Pedmore. These two clubs have been undergoing contrasting fortunes this season. Hagley are competing strongly for the championship. Pedmore face relegation unless they improve. Or at least they did until they turned the form book on its head and won Saturday's match. Penmore batted first and reached a total of 221 all out after 48 of the permitted 50 overs. Hagley's form this summer would suggest they shouldn't have had much trouble overcoming that, but wickets began to tumble, none of their batsmen could get going, and they were all out for a total of 177 in only 39 overs. A match for them to forget, I think. Fortunately, Cookley, who'd been just ahead of Hagley at the top of the First Division league table, lost as well on Saturday, but Worcester Cricket Club took advantage, won their match against Droitwich, and have taken over at the top. But only 2 points separate these three clubs at the moment. In the Second Division, Belbroughton won against Coombs Wood and are climbing the league table, but Old Swinford, after their fine victory the week before, slumped to defeat against Bromyard and are still near the wrong end of the league table. This week's local speedway news saw the Wolverhampton Wolves finally back in action on Monday evening against Rye House, with an away fixture against the same opponents due on Saturday. Monday's home fixture led to victory by 50 points to 41, another excellent team performance which preserved the team's 100% home record in the league this season. The usual names were largely to the fore for Wolves, led by top scorer Jacob Torsell, and the team won 11 of the 15 heats during the evening. Thanks to this win, the Wolves have closed to within a point of the league leaders, Bellevue, and there's a 10-point gap now to third place, Poole Pirates. However, the Rye House team are a different prospect on their own track, so I await the result of Saturday's return match with interest. I was flicking my way through the television channels on Saturday evening and came across the final of the Speedway World Cup being raced in Poland and involving teams from the host country and from Sweden, Russia and Great Britain. Team GB were dire and finished last of the four in this, but there was a familiar name, none other than Freddie Lindgren, doyen of the Wolves team, and in this contest a member of the Swedish World Cup squad. Sweden and Freddie did well, finishing second in the contest, but Poland were the champions. Speedway is a huge sport in Poland. The stadium where this World Cup final took place is like a major football stadium in this country, and it was packed with fans. Lindgren was excellent for the Swedish team and perhaps still feeling the effects of his efforts, he didn't lead the scoring for his Wolves team in Monday evening's league match. Well, we're fast approaching the climax to this year's Wimbledon tennis, and it's great to see Great Britain with a representative still in action in both the men's and women's singles event. Jo Konter had already established herself as far and away the leading British female player before the last 10 days and has gone on to justify her high seeding at Wimbledon by reaching the semi-final, which she'll contest against Venus Williams on Thursday. Hers is really an amazing story when you remember that less than 2 years ago, Jo was ranked around 140th in the world. She appears absolutely nerveless. In fact, I think she plays even better when her back's against the wall. Over the past week, she's come through from potential defeat against first the Croatian player Vekic in the second round, where Jo won the final set by 10-8, then against Caroline Garcia in the fourth round and Halep in the quarter-final. These were all three-set matches. There were times in each when she looked as though she was heading for defeat, but she seems to put all negative thoughts out of her mind and play each point as it comes. The Venus Williams contest is one to savour, and I can't wait for Thursday. Andy Murray's progress has perhaps been more to be expected. His quarter-final today is against the American Sam Querrey, and on paper you'd take Andy to win, although it's best to take nothing for granted. Although Rafa Nadal has bitten the dust, his conqueror Muller has been showing remarkable form and is potentially Andy's semi-final opponent, but we'll worry about that if he gets there. I wish they'd show more men's doubles on television, for I think it's a super spectacle, and I was both amused and gripped by the British pairing of Marcus Willis and his partner Clark, who were finally eliminated in the third round, but not before they defeated last year's champions. Willis is ranked way down in the high hundreds in singles, but you may remember he caused a sensation last year when he came through the qualifying, actually won his first round match, and then lost to Roger Federer. He's a delight to watch. He doesn't seem to take anything seriously. He just likes to entertain. And to finish this week, an update on what is probably the world's most gruelling sporting event, the Tour de France cycle race. We're into the second week and Team Sky's Chris Froome, who's won it the last 2 years, holds a slender 18-second overall lead. But one of his most reliable support riders, Geraint Thomas, is out of the race, having suffered a fractured collarbone in an accident. Froome himself has kissed the road surface more than once. On one occasion, he was deliberately knocked off his bike by another rider, who was then excluded. But battered and bruised, he's still there fighting. The 2,000-odd-mile race has now reached the Pyrenees, where the riders have to rely on the specialist hill climbers in each team to shoulder the burden, and Sky are still intent on bringing the prize back to Britain at the end of another 2 weeks of torture. I hope to bring you another update next week. However, we've run out of space this time, so that's the end of the sports report, which I hope you've enjoyed. Look forward to being back in front of the microphone in another 7 days, but until then, it's goodbye from Brian Gall.